Hello and welcome to episode 40 of Track. At Track, our aim is to shine a light on the UK running club scene. This week on Track, we have a roundup of the latest news and results from around the running world, including the most recent round of cross-country races, the Derby 10-miler, the Reading Half Marathon, and more. As always, I'm joined by Kat Hutchison and George Beardmore. How are we doing, guys?
Yeah, all good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, George. I should have mentioned actually in the intro, we also have an interview at the end, as always. And this week is with Rose Harvey. Kat, you sat down with Rose a few weeks ago now and spoke about her most recent marathon performance in London, her PB there. So that's a good one for the listeners to wait for at the end of the show. How's everything going, George? I suppose the best place to start is with you. So I'm sure some of our listeners know already, but you had a cracking performance at the first Birmingham League cross-country fixture, finishing in third place out of how I don't know how many. But take us through it. How was the race for you? And give us the blow-by-blow.
Yeah, it was good. It's really good. I think I knew I've been training well, so I thought I had a chance of winning if Omar Ahmed and Kadar Omar weren't there. I didn't see them warming up anywhere. I didn't see them before the race. I thought I might have a chance of winning, and then about 100 meters in, there they were. So that was that gone. But I think them being there helped me run even better, to be honest, because otherwise I probably would have just stayed with the rest of the field, or like the lead pack minus them. But I think they went out pretty steady by their standards. I knew Omar had run at Reading the week before, Reading half. So, yeah, I think they either did like two laps steady or one lap and then one lap harder, whatever. So they sort of dragged me to 100 metres or so clear of everyone else. I was the only one that was brave enough to go with them, or stupid enough, depending on which way you look at it. And yeah, just held on to third. They then disappeared, particularly on the last lap. They started to pull away. They were probably 100 metres ahead anyway, but then the last lap, they completely went. But yeah, I just about held on. It was tough. Second half was really tough, I think. Yeah, it certainly didn't make it easy for myself by going with them. But yeah, it worked, I suppose. So I think them being there meant that I was a bit braver than I otherwise would have been. I wouldn't have tried to pull away from the start from everyone else. Like, if they weren't there, that would just be a very bold thing to do. So yeah, really good run, good way to start the season. I think I ran the same course 2 years ago and I ran about 2 minutes quicker this time, so good progress there, and by far my best Birmingham League finish. I finished seventh in one in the past, but otherwise it'd always been like between 15th and 20th, so yeah, quite a big jump up to finish third. And yeah, I the best result I could have expected, really, because I knew I was never going to beat those two. They're just a class above of everyone else in that league, so yeah, really, really pleased.
Yeah, it was amazing to see the results come through. You were so Omar Ahmed is Birchfield and Kadar Omar is also Birchfield, and they were 29.05 and 29.22, and then you came in at 29.57, so about 35 seconds behind second place. And then in fourth place was Charlie Davis of University of Birmingham, and he was about 12 to 15 seconds behind you. So how much did you know that he was, how much did you know about what was going on behind you towards those last couple of bits of running, I suppose?
Yeah, I knew. I mean, I thought they were, they're in a big group certainly for the first lap, and then Charlie, I could see, pulled away from them. So I knew really on the last lap, it was only Charlie that was going to have a chance of catching me. And I was like struggling at that point. I mean, I think my splits were pretty consistent. I didn't use GPS, but I've seen Charlie's splits on Strava and his were consistent. I kept the gap to him consistent. So I don't think I was dying, but I was certainly finding it hard work on my last lap. So I just had to make sure I did enough to stay ahead of him, really. I was probably turning around and looking where he is more than I should be. Totally not supposed to do that, because it makes them know that you're worried about them. But And as soon as I knew, I'll try and do a sprint finish, whatever. But as soon as I knew that they were, I had enough of a gap with a 200 meters to go, whatever, I pretty much just gave up because I was really struggling at that point to, I had a bit of a stitch, which didn't help. But I mean, I knew they had a chance of catching me on that last lap, or particularly Charlie did, but just about held it together enough to stay ahead.
So was the no GPS a so you did that on purpose just to focus on effort and racing rather than looking at splits and pace?
Yeah, I think so. I think I wanted to race it more than I'd normally do. I don't like very it's quite new for me that I'm able to go to a race thinking of winning it. Certainly at that standard. Obviously, that was before I knew Omar and Caddo were there. But I think the original race plan was to go in the lead group and just race tactically, minus Omar and Caddo, which I didn't do because I pulled away from the lead group and went with Omar straight away. So didn't get that right. But I think the plan was to just race it tactically and try and win kind of from everyone else. So that was the reason for the no watch. But like I say, I didn't execute the race plan how I was supposed to, but I think it worked out really well because I picked up straight away, maybe in the first 400 meters or so, that, I mean, Omar normally, well, he goes out really hard in particular, normally. So as soon as I knew he hadn't gone out hard, it kind of hit me that maybe they're just taking it a bit steady for the first lap or so that means I could have used them to pull me ahead of everyone else, which is what I did. And I was the only one, let's say, brave or stupid enough to go with them. And it worked.
Yeah. And was that the plan you and Frank Baddick had come up with together, or was that your plan just on your own?
Plan we came up with together. So I did spend most of the first lap thinking, how do I explain this to Frank when I tell him I didn't stay in the main group and I did go with Omar and Kadar. But it works in the end, so it's fine.
Kat, how cool is it to hear that George went into it thinking I've got a chance of winning a race like that? Pretty
Yeah,
cool, isn't it?
it was pretty exciting to watch. There was a lot of Wisteracy AC supporters out around the course. Everyone was pretty excited to find George in third. And yeah, we were getting a little nervous when the fourth place ones left the other group and started to chase you. But after a while, we could see he wasn't making any ground on you. But it was really exciting. There was obviously the whole of the Wisteracy men were excited to have a third place, and definitely helps them out in the league.
And dragonflies, George. You wore dragonflies like the like we see across the pond.
I mean, I've had to accept they're in the corner behind me. I've ruined them already and haven't washed them like I should have done. I've had to get over that. I have the white ones as well, not the orange ones. It wouldn't be as bad to have the orange ones. I see everyone doing it in America and from some of the British races as well. I think Jake Smith did it at the Cardiff Cross Challenge. Zach Mohammed's been doing it as well and running well. Quite a few people did it at the national relays. Like, and they're not going to be worse as long as you put long spikes in. They're like going to be just as good as cross country spikes. And if it any part of the grass that's firm, you obviously then get. The benefit of the carbon plate. So definitely felt good. Whether that's like in my head more than anything, I don't know. But as long as I've accepted the fact that I'm gonna wreck a pair of dragonflies over the next few months, I definitely think they're definitely not worse than cross country spikes, and on firm courses they're probably better.
Yeah, and running shoes are for running at the end of the day, aren't they? So you might as well wear them. And what are the goals then for the season? Have you sat down and thought about overall position across the whole season, or you just take it one picture at a time?
Just one fixture at a time. With the Birmingham League, I know that if Omar and Kadar do like three of the four races, they'll win, or one of them will win, the other one will come second in the overall series. So I suppose I might have a chance of coming third, depending on who turns up with the remaining fixtures. So that would be quite nice, I suppose.
Good. And Kat, you were there as well. How did your race go?
Yeah, my race was first race in a long time, so probably since back in June. So it was really fun to be racing again. I haven't put my spikes on in 2 years, and that was a bit of a mistake. More minutes before the race, I ended up with a big blister on the second lap and just had to run through it, which was a little bit painful. I'm showing it to everyone that would look when I finished. No one was that interested. But I really noticed it.
Very good. And George, what's next then? You've got the next two weekends you're racing, aren't you?
Yeah, the next four, actually. Okay. So it'll be five in a row.
What you got?
Only two of them in theory were races I was tapering for. So that's Liverpool on the 27th and Liverpool Cross Challenge and Telford on the 12th of December. But so tomorrow on the 20th, I'm doing the Midlands 7 mile cross country championships, and they're using that as well as Liverpool for quite a big consideration for the Midlands team for the home countries international, which I think is in Ireland in January. So that's why I'm going there. That's tomorrow. And then Liverpool the week after, then another Birmingham League, which I won't taper for. I will taper for Liverpool. And then the week after the Birmingham League, Telford 10K, which I will taper for. So yeah, busy racing period.
Yeah, and just on Telford 10K, you've been selected to run for the Midlands team. Am I right in saying that? Alongside Jack Gray, Matt Clowes, and a couple of others?
Yes, Jack Gray, Matt Clowes, Samuel Moakes, and Alistair Watson. Is that right? Is that his name? I think that's right. Five of us. So yeah, that's good. Yeah, pleased with that. Just another opportunity to wear a Midlands vest and yeah, hopefully go for a sub 30 10K.
Sub 30 is the goal there, yeah. Okay, great. Well, very good. We'll catch up as we always do with all the races when you run them. And just well done again. Great to see you get going so well. I think it's just a culmination of the year's hard work, really, and coming into age and all the rest of it. So yeah, very exciting to see you go so well.
Thank you.
Cool. Do we want to have a look at some results? We had the MK Cross Challenge, George, as you said. That was on, November the 13th. And again, we saw Hugo Milner do quite well there. I don't know if you saw much of this, but in the women's race, we saw Jess Gibbon move up from third place from her Cardiff to take a narrow win over Jenny Nesbitt, who's consistently sort of podiuming in the last few races that she's ran in. So MK Cross Challenge, another good one this year, George?
Yeah, no, it's one I always like doing it, actually. I didn't this year because I wanted to do the Birmingham League, but looked like a good race and some strong results, particularly in the men's race. I know or have trained quite a lot with Matt Stonier and Angus McMillan, who were sixth and seventh, which is really, really good going in a senior race. Zach Mohammed's absolutely flying as well as a under 23. I think he's the same age as me. So to be up there with Hugo Milner is really good going. So yeah, it looked like a great race. Lots of dragonflies on display as well, I think, there. So yeah.
And Hugo Milner seems to tower above people, doesn't he, when you see him on the feed. He seemed a big, powerful runner and obviously spent a lot of time in America, didn't he? So yeah. Just showing his class over the cross-country terrain again. Kat, Jenny Nesbitt coming second. Good to see Jenny running well. As I said, she seems to be finishing up on the podium in most of her races recently.
Yeah, hopefully she's coming into a bit of form. I think she's been saying a lot that she's getting fed up with not progressing. So hopefully this is her time she's actually starting to make some moves forwards. Milton Keynes thing, I do always worry with this that it will take away from the leagues and things. Like, it's a good competition, but I really like to see the really good runners at the leagues, and it's sort of, you worry if it gets too big that too many would choose that over the league stuff, and then you don't get those really big stars at the running with everyone else, which is But at least George made the right decision and decided to do the Birmingham League.
Yeah, it's a good point, isn't it? It's and I think when there are league fixtures, obviously more than one, people are perhaps even more inclined to go and do with these things because they can race in the other fixtures in the
league. It was really good at the cross country on Saturday. Amelia Quirk was there and Hayley Carruthers and stuff. And it's really, you know, it's good because you get all the young club runners, all the young girls turning up to those cross countries. They get to see people like that. So I don't like the idea of watering down the races too much by having people choose between two leagues or two, you know, season long competitions. But it would be nice to see it kind of all the energy go into one league.
Yeah. George, is there prize money at these? So Milton Keynes, Cardiff, etc.
Yes, there is, and I think it's pretty good actually. Certainly the overall series winner and the winner of the final in Loughborough, I think they get pretty good money. I'm just trying to find some information on prize money, but it's normally available somewhere.
Obviously no prize money at Birmingham Leagues, etc., is there?
No, so I've just found it for the Cross Challenge Series 2 years ago. So the winners of the senior men's and women's races at the individual races. So that's Cardiff, Milton Keynes, then Liverpool, and I think it's Dundonald this year rather than Stirling. The winners get £500, and then the winner in Loughborough for the final gets 2,000. So
okay,
quite a lot of money on offer. If you turn up and win all four races, like Hugo Milner seems to be trying to do, that's £4,000 worth of prize money. So, and even with like the junior men, if you win all four and junior women, you can get £1,600 out of it. So yeah, I can see why the best want to be there, because that's not an insignificant amount of money.
Yeah, not to be sniffed at, I suppose. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. George, you seen much of the cross country, the NCAAs happening across the States? I know we're going to mention that tomorrow. We'll should be able to watch some NCAA stuff on BT Sport. Do you want to talk us through when and where we can watch that?
Yeah, so BT Sport 2, I think. 3 o'clock Saturday, 3 till 5. I think the men's race is at 10 past 3. Women's race at 10 past 3 UK time, and the men's race at 20 past 4. I'm pretty sure, and I think it's 6 and 10K, or it might be 8 and 10K. No, I'm pretty sure the women do 6 and the men do 10. So, should be a really good race. There's quite a few Brits that could be right up there. I think Charles Hicks is one of the top 5 favourites. Conor Mounce is still around, isn't he? I think. Mm-hmm. So if he is, I think he's probably the favourite. But Charles Hicks beat Cooper Tier, who won the NCAA 5K in the summer. He beat him at regionals. So yeah, Hicks has got a great chance, I think. And Adam Fogg's been running well. Fogg Dog. Scott Beattie's been running well as well. So yeah, lots to look out for in the men's race. And then I think in the women's race, Phoebe Anderson, who's British, I think she's in there. Katie Ann McDonald's another one. Hopefully exciting races. And good that it's on TV, because normally you have to find some dodgy stream that, yeah, probably shouldn't be watching on.
Yeah, and we were saying just off air that last year the coverage was really, really good. So in terms of sort of live team standings and obviously individual standings, split screens and all the rest of it, so hopefully that's the same this year, Kat.
Yeah, it was a good watch last year. It was a lot of information available, so yeah, hopefully BT Sport showing it won't be any different.
And where is it?
Because it's in Tallahassee in Florida, I think. Okay. And I thought, because BT, are they part of ESPN? Does one own the other? I think.
Okay.
So, and it's normally on ESPN in the US, so I imagine it would just be the ESPN coverage, which is good.
Yeah. Cool. Back in the UK, we had the Derby 10 miler on November the 14th. And we saw in the men's race, Ross Minnington breaking Ben Connor's course record. He ran a time of 48.37, and your coach, Frank Baddick, and previous interviewee, George, came second, and he ran 49.40. Was Frank pleased with that over 10 miles, 49.40, George?
Yes, he was, I think, because that's obviously it's what, a month after the Great South Run, and about a minute 40, I think he won about 51.20-ish. Might have been a bit quicker, but anyway, I think he was pleased with the progress he'd made in the last month. Step in the right direction. So, yeah, definitely pleased with that.
Perfect. And in the women's race, we saw Jip Vastenberg win in 56.17. And in second place was Leila Armouche, and she ran 57.32. Some good running over the 10 mile. Not always a distance we talk about much at the recently, the 10 mile race, but good to see that one happening. And other races that we've seen, I suppose, over the last few weeks. So we had the Heaton 10K, we saw the Los Angeles Marathon take place, and we also saw the Reading Half Marathon. George Omar Ahmed winning the Reading Half Marathon. So again, just showing his, I don't know, consistent, really good race performances for Omar Ahmed.
Yeah, he just seems to go to all these like semi-big road races and just collecting prize money by the looks of it. Just, yeah, running good time after good time. So, yeah, very consistent. And then, as I say, seemed to be in pretty good shape at the Birmingham League the week after. 62.14 is, really good going. I still think he's not eligible to compete for GB, although I do think they've tried. That would be the sort of time that would get him into a GB, like world half marathon sort of team. So, yeah, clearly in really good shape.
Yeah, so he ran 62.14. Kat, going back to the Los Angeles Marathon, Natasha Cockrum ran 2:33.16 for the win. Natasha must be pretty pleased with that, a fairly big win.
Yeah, I think she was pleased with the win. I saw that she had put on Instagram that she was, well, her first instinct when she crossed the line was she was disappointed with the time, and then had to kind of reassess and think it's a difficult course, and she's just taken the win. So she looks like she's in good shape. She didn't have long between the two marathons, so that's be a good win for her.
Yeah, so London was just 5 weeks earlier, and she ran 2:32.32 in London, so a tad quicker. To turn around another decent marathon in 5 weeks, and obviously travel and everything else, and the win, must be pleased. Yeah. So that's good. And that's the third time that she's actually bettered the Welsh Commonwealth Games standard of 2:35.30 this year. So if she wants a place, I'm pretty sure she'll be offered a Commonwealth Games slot for Wales next year. Okay. Cool. So let's have a quick look at some news. Not a huge amount. We're going to touch upon Shalane Flanagan's 6 marathon majors in 6 weeks and have a look at those times. The first one we're going to look at, George, though, is something that you've put on the agenda, which was the 2021-2022 cohort of Futures Academy program athletes announced. So British Athletics have announced that 26 athletes will begin their journey on the Olympic Futures program, supported by Nike. How much do you know about this, George?
Yeah, not a lot, actually. I think it's just, I suppose, below kind of the main British Athletics funding. It's just for youngsters. I think there's quite a few distance runners on it, which is good to see. Quite a lot from every event, quite a few sprinters, field event, but distance runners included Josh Lay, George Mills, Jake Smith, Ben Patterson, Max Bergin, Erin Wallace, Izzy Boffey. I think they were all on the what they're calling the Olympic Futures Transition. And then there's Olympic Futures Academy, whatever the difference is between them. I presume Transition is above Academy. It is on the list. So, and that included Kane Elliott, Ethan Hussey, Henrik McLuckie, Kehisa Malanga, and Tom Keane. So distance, lots of distance runners on there. A few missing outs that I'm a bit surprised by. I thought Tom Mortimer could be on there. I'm only probably thinking that because I know him. But yeah, I think there were a couple of people at Loughborough who thought he might be on there after the season he had running 13:28. I suppose it's maybe a bit because he seems to be predominantly middle distance runners. So I think similar to Jess Judd not getting funding, I think long distance runners do seem to get penalised by the fact that they're less likely to win medals at global championships because of the dominance of Kenya and Ethiopia and Uganda. So whether that's fair or not, I don't know. I suppose medals is, well, medal potential is probably the easiest way of doing it. And yeah, you are more likely to win a medal in a 800, 1500 than you are in the 5K, 10K, realistically. So, yeah, whether that's fair or not, you got to feel sorry for people that miss out on funding just because of the strength from other countries, particularly when then people get relay funding just because a relay medal is not an easy medal to get, but a good medal chance when probably as individuals, compared to the strength of America and Jamaica, they're probably nowhere near like as good as someone like Tom Mortimer in this like junior funding thing, or like Jess Judd is on the global scene. So yeah, it's a bit of a shame that they seem to do it by medals, but like, yeah, probably shouldn't be complaining. It's better they're giving funding to someone rather than no one.
Yeah, sure.
So we'll keep an eye on, and as you say, those are names that we've spoken about quite a lot already. So it'll be interesting to see actually how many of those go on to the Olympics and Paralympics. And it'll be interesting to see how well they pick these future athletes, if you like. So yeah, some funding there.
Yeah, it's interesting to see Jake Smith on the list. Obviously, he's someone that they believe could compete with the Kenyans and Ethiopian, so that's a positive, and he does look that way, so it's you can get on the list, you just have to be
really good. Yeah, I wonder, because I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure Tom has run faster than Jake for the 5k. I might be wrong about that, but so maybe they're giving him funding based on his like apparent marathon potential, which is interesting. Yeah, considering he's never really done one properly, but he
has the potential from what he's showing, doesn't he, to really actually compete with the best in the world. So it's a good choice, I think, to give funding to someone like him in the longer distances. But he is pretty much the only one on that list that runs anything over 1500.
Yeah, he is. And yeah, I've just looked. So he is, like Tom is quicker. Tom might be older as well. But yeah, I mean, they're clearly seeing what everyone else sees, that if you can run a 2:11 marathon, like not tapering for it, pacemaking, no gels, no water, and then he recently paced Bashir Abdi to what, 2:06 or something, I think. Or
European record, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, yeah, it might have been quicker than 2:06 then. Yeah. So clearly they're seeing that he's got quite a lot of potential in the longer distances. So yeah, hopefully that means he's got something lined up, or getting something lined up.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of marathons, Kat, what did you think of Shalane Flanagan? So she completed 6 major marathons in 6 weeks. She's the first person in history to complete all 6 major marathons in as many weeks after finishing the New York Marathon on Sunday, November the 7th. So she ran Berlin, London, Chicago, Boston, a virtual Tokyo in her home of Portland, and New York. She ran 2:38, 2:35, 2:46, 2:40, 2:35, and 2:33. So are we impressed with this, Kat? Did you think this was a good thing to witness?
I'd rather just see her won one marathon at her best than complete six. I don't know, it seems like it's kind of just taking part for the sake of taking part. Like, she, you know, it's impressive that she ran quite a few of them quite fast. But yeah, I'd rather just see her train and run one really fast.
George, what about you?
Yeah, do we count the virtual Tokyo one? Is that one point asterisk by it? No, it was impressive, particularly to run a 2:33 for the sixth marathon in 6 weeks or whatever it was. Yeah, that's really impressive. But I agree with Kat. If she can run 2:33, it's her sixth marathon in 6 weeks, she probably could have run certainly sub 2:30, maybe quite a bit quicker than that if she just did one properly. But clearly she's stage in her career, well, she's retired, so yeah, where she just is running for the fun of it rather than chasing PBs and stuff.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think she has inspired and impressed lots of people in the running world with it, but then most of the, how should I word this, perhaps more serious runners, shall we say, I suppose, have had the same response that you guys have had.
I thought my response might be a bit harsh, but I just just wasn't interested whilst watching her do it. I just thought, just run one at your best.
Yeah, just run 1:2:18 or whatever she's ran.
Yeah.
Well, there we are. She's done it. And I agree with you, George. I think the fact you ran New York at the end, particularly one of probably the toughest course out of the six, potentially Boston's tougher. But yeah, to run the toughest one at the end in the quickest time probably shows that she's a class above those times that she's running there anyway. So yeah, there we are. Well, speaking of marathon runners, Kat, you had an interview with Rose Harvey. Rose has just ran 2:29 at London. How did that chat go and what can the listeners expect to hear from that?
Yeah, it was really interesting. Obviously, we didn't know much about her till she kind of burst onto the scene in when she ran that Cheshire Elite Marathon that you did and ran it in 2:30. So really interesting to sort of find out a bit more about her. And I said to her during the interview, I always take away something from every interview, and for her it's probably the sort of the fact that she was so good but would never have found that out if she didn't commit to actually a period of actually giving it a go and really, you know, see what she could do. And so that was really interesting, just since she was sat on all that talent and had never really given running a proper shot. And then during lockdown, she gave it a proper go and turns out she's really good. So I think it's really exciting for the future to see what she can do, having, you know, just done a few marathons and already under 2:30. So yeah, it was really good to chat to her, and hope everyone enjoys the interview.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. Thanks, Kat. George, what you got coming up this week? Well, so you're racing tomorrow, so straight off the call, early night. And how far do you have to travel tomorrow?
It's Nottingham, so only about half an hour from Loughborough. So that's good. Yeah, going after some tea and then hopefully get a good sleep. That's it really. That's my weekend pretty much sorted. I'll watch NCAAs tomorrow. That's it.
And then you're reloading again for your race next week. Did you say you're tapering for next week or no?
Yes, yeah. So Liverpool's quite a big one. It's European trials for the European cross country. I think there's in Dublin in December. I think everyone's taking that one quite seriously.
Cool. So what would a taper week look like for you? Reduced miles, one session, two sessions?
Yeah, one and a bit sessions. I'll probably do something on Thursday, like just a bit of speed to keep legs ticking over. But mainly, yeah, session Tuesday, probably just a single day Wednesday. Yeah, something light on Thursday and then probably rest on Friday, race Saturday. So, yeah.
Cool. And do you do gym stuff on your taper week as well?
We normally do gym Monday, Wednesday, which I have done this week, but I'll probably just do gym Monday when I'm tapering and miss the Wednesday gym session just to, try not to overdo it in the gym.
Cool. Sounds good.
Are you just trying to imagine how George could possibly race after a gym session? You're just trying to get into it.
I'm just frantically writing down all these notes. and Kat, what have you got coming up? Anything?
No, not much at all. I'm just doing what I've said for the last 6 months, just trying to build the miles back up. Got about another month before marathon training starts, so just trying to keep building. I'm feeling pretty positive about this one. I think it's going to be a good one, but we'll see.
The phrase I've been using with a couple of friends who are doing Manchester is now's the time to get fit to get fit. So
yeah,
consistency so you can start your marathon block in a good place.
Yeah,
cool. All right, guys. Well, thanks very much for listening. George, best of luck for tomorrow. And hope you enjoy the Rose Harvey interview. And we'll talk to you soon. Cheers, guys.
Cheers. See you soon.
So tonight on Track, we're excited to be joined by up-and-coming British marathon runner Rose Harvey. So I'm speaking to Rose about a month after running an impressive 2:29:45 at London Marathon to finish second Brit. And while most people may spend a month relaxing, I believe you've just got back from a holiday in Portugal where instead of chilling on the beach, you're actually competing in a half Ironman. How did that go? How had your legs recovered after London?
Hi Kat. You know what, I think they actually had. It wasn't, you know, it's not the traditional holiday activity, but we actually, it's one of those COVID events that we booked in I think 2019, and basically Ironman don't ever give refunds for anything, so we had these horribly expensive entries to a half Ironman in Portugal, and instead of giving up our entry fee, we kind of thought, well, it's quite good timing after the marathon, I'll be, you know, recovered but not back to full training, and it sounds like a fun day out. So me and my fiance went out to Portugal and did this half Ironman, horribly underprepared. Had done very little cycling or swimming training, but it was really fun. Loved it.
Yeah, it looks like you went really well as well.
Yeah, I was going to say better than expected, but I wasn't expecting anything at all. So, it went a lot better than expected. I was actually quite happy with my bike and swim, given the complete lack of training. And got through it all right and felt okay on the run as well. So obviously the legs have recovered enough to get through it.
Yeah, that was impressive. Was it 1:20 half marathon off the bike?
Yeah. It's the first 5K felt terrible. I mean, I hadn't done any practice running off the bike, and actually some of my friends who did triathlon, that was their parting words. They're like, just do a couple of runs off the bike. And of course I didn't. And so it felt really terrible for the first 5K. And then I just remember thinking at about 5K mark, I was like, oh, my legs don't hurt anymore. So that was the only thing on the run that was a bit of a shock to the system. But otherwise I seemed to kind of get into it and remember how to do a fairly good half marathon.
So this was kind of something you planned before you kind of almost became an elite marathon runner. This is kind of something you were sort of focusing on back then, was it, in 2019? Or?
Yeah, exactly. So, I was doing a bit of triathlon then, and it was way before I started with my coach, Phil, and way before I was doing any serious running at all. So I think we just signed up for kind of a fun challenge really, and something to work towards. And then obviously since 2019 the goals have shifted a bit, but it was been moved twice I think, so eventually got around to it.
Yeah, no more triathlons for a little while, you think?
No, I don't think so. I think I just about got away with it with my coach on a one-off, but I don't think I'd get away with another one.
I did wonder how a coach was letting you do that a month after the marathon. I was thinking, oh, that, I know with the coaches I've met, that wouldn't go down well.
Yeah, I did sort of undersell it a bit, and I thought I would get away with it just on the basis that, you know, I'd just subtly slip in this triathlon without really, you know, without it getting out in the media as to what it actually was. But I kind of scuppered it by qualifying for the World Championships and getting on the podium, so it wasn't quite as subtle as I was hoping.
So are you going to go to the Worlds, or you think you'll be too?
No, I think I've got a pass on that one.
Got bigger fish to fry next year.
Yeah, exactly.
So when I started preparing for this interview, I obviously start trying to stalk you a little bit online, and it's been quite tricky to find too much out about you, I think probably because you are so new to the elite running world. But from looking on your Power of 10, I did notice that the first entry was a 1500 metre run that you ran for Worcester AC back in 2006. I don't know if you know, but at Track Podcast, we all run for Worcester AC. So I was pretty interested to see how, like, where did all your running start and what was your time like at Worcester AC all the way back then?
Yeah, so I actually started, I used to be really terrible at sport at school, like shocking, couldn't do anything. And basically there was one sports day, and everyone got to, it sounds very unfair, and I'm sure this doesn't happen anymore, but basically the sportiest people got to choose what events they did, and then the people who were terrible like me got kind of left for the dregs, which happened to be the 1500 meters. And I was devastated about it, and I went home, I cried to my mom, and I was like, can't go to school, can't do this, you know, I couldn't finish, I couldn't run 1500 meters. And my mum basically said, you're going to school, you're going to do the race, so you better train for it and just try not to embarrass yourself too much. So she took me out on a few runs, and I trained for it for a couple of months or something, and just, you know, built up. Literally, I remember I did this little bit of road I used to run along at home was probably a mile long, and it felt really long. Yeah, I did this race after a couple of months training, and I came second. And I was just absolutely amazed that, you know, I went into it. My goal was just to, it wasn't even to not come last. It was just like, don't get lapped, don't come embarrassingly last. So I remember I went home and I was like, I can't believe I came second. And after that, I signed up. I was at school in Worcester, and so yeah. After that, I signed up to Worcester Athletics to get some training, and I used to love it there, and just kind of became a school 1500 meter runner. And I wasn't super exceptional, but I think I got to nationals one year, and then yeah, did that throughout school and a bit of cross country. I was never, you know, I was never anything groundbreaking really, and then had a complete break through university of absolutely no running at all, and then kind of got back into it when I moved to London in I think 2015, and joined my running club. So that was kind of how I got into it all, really.
That's amazing. It shows that maybe there is still a place for sports days for even the kids that aren't sporty, might just find out that they actually,
yeah, years later, hidden talent
spent in England. you ran your first marathon in 2016, so shortly after moving to London, in 2 hours 55. What did training look like back then? Was it, what sort of mileage were you doing?
I was probably doing about 40 miles a week then. And I honestly just signed up for the marathon as a bit of a challenge. Someone wrote me into it to sign up, signed up for a bit of a challenge, and just trained with my club. I didn't have a coach back then, but just sort of tried to get to the sessions. I was doing my legal trading contract at the time, so my hours were pretty horrendous at work, so I don't think I actually made that many of the evening sessions. But yeah, I just tried to make a couple of the I don't think I did track back then, but I tried to do a few of the tempo sessions with the club, and yeah, I was really happy with my time in that. I wasn't expecting, I think I was aiming for like 3:15 or something. So yeah, it was and I absolutely loved it. I just remember going round thinking like, this is the most amazing thing, and I was having the best time. So
incredible.
Yeah, it was a good start.
Did you sort of discover then that that was your distance that you loved, or is that sort of still something you're trying to decide?
I don't think I decided back then, really. I was just, I mean, to be honest, I didn't have a huge amount of focus on particular races or particular goals. I was just running for fun. You know, I was very much a hobby runner, and training would kind of go up and down depending on work and life, and it was never a huge priority for me as such. But yeah, I think it's only really since I started with my coach that we kind of honed in on the marathon as my event and discovered that's probably what I'm best at. Although, to be honest, I'm not 100% sure about that yet either, because I just haven't done that many and haven't done that many other races. So yeah, just kind of still discovering.
So you ran a similar time at London 2018, and then in 2021 at the Cheshire Elite Marathon, you took a massive 25 minutes off your PB. Now, myself and I guess all the other runners out there are probably like really keen to hear, what did you do differently? Like, you know, tell us what we can do from a 3-hour marathon down to a 2:30. How did you do it?
Well, it was basically a lockdown project. It started well when I was working for a company working really bad hours, not really enjoying it, and then actually just before lockdown, my now coach had approached me and said, oh, do you want some coaching? And I just couldn't do it, like with the hours I was working, I just like cannot commit to it. But then just at the start of lockdown, I think a couple of months in, the company announced that they were going to wind up, and I had 3 months garden leave. So I'd suddenly gone, and this was you know, it was the summer, so couldn't travel, couldn't do anything, and I'd suddenly gone from working a crazy job to having like 3 months, couldn't travel, shut in the house with loads of time on my hands, and I was like, I've got to have a good project here, otherwise I'm going to go mental. So I basically got back in touch with Phil and said about that coaching, let's give it a go and see how quick I can get over summer. So that was as long term as I was thinking, really. I didn't even think I'd stick it out all summer, because I'd seen he also coaches my friend Steph Davis, and I'd seen a bit of her training and thought, no way can I do that, no way. So yeah, it was just a bit of a summer project to kind of keep me busy and see how quick I can get in the process, but absolutely loved it, had a great time, and was really enjoying the sessions and the program, and just having the focus and on a race and on getting a time, which just seemed so unbelievably out of reach before. So yeah, that's how Cheshire really came about, and obviously there's a bit of shortage of races at the time, but that one popped up, and somehow they let me in with a 2:55 marathon quite a long time ago. So yeah, I got in and did that race, and it was a yeah, such a, I felt like that was sort of my breakthrough moment, really, when I realized that actually, you know, I could do something with running, and it was actually going somewhere.
Yeah, that must have been incredible to run 2:30 after, you know. Did you know you would get anywhere near that? Was that your sort of target, or was there?
Yeah, so I was aiming for, I think my target was sub 2:32. And my training was looking good and looking like I could do that time. But I think part of me just couldn't believe it, because it had been such a quick journey. And, you know, I just, even though I really just had to trust my coach, because there was such a big part of me being like, that is such a, you know, that's time I could never have even dreamed of 6 months ago. So I just had to really trust my training and my coach and what he said I could do, really.
Yeah. And then, so you ran that, and then you got an elite start at London. That must have been amazing after having done it twice before to then be there on the elite race.
Yeah, it was the most incredible experience. It was one of those times that I just had to keep pinching myself that I was there. It felt so surreal. And, you know, especially I live in London, so you know, home on the home turf was just an incredible experience. I think just being around and lining up with, you know, all these runners that I've followed over the years as elite runners and being like, oh my god, I'm actually there with them, it was incredible.
Yeah, that must be really amazing, like standing there with Charlotte Perdue and people like that, just thinking, and you know, to finish second to her, that's an amazing experience.
Yeah, it really was.
So how did it compare to Cheshire, like with the conditions and the crowds and things like that? Were they very different races?
Yeah, I think in some ways they were. The crowds, Cheshire obviously was still in the height of lockdown, so not many crowds at all there. But it was, being an elite race, it was actually quite a, and we ran with men as well. So there wasn't, I think I was by myself a bit in Cheshire, but it wasn't a particularly lonely race, but I think it did feel a bit weird without the crowds. And it was a multi-lap course on kind of quiet country lanes. And yeah, I
watched the streaming of it, because Ben, who does the podcast, was in it. And it looked like it could be a training run at some parts.
Yeah, that was the thing. It was quite hard to kind of keep the race focus, I think.
Yeah.
And it did feel just a bit like a marathon training long run, really. So that was a big difference in London. I think, you know, the build up just before the race, it was just, London was so different. It felt like such a kind of bigger event. It was still, I mean, it was still quite a lonely race. The elite women go off first. And so once the pacemakers drop out, you're pretty solo. Well, certainly I was, unless you've got a good group to run with. So, in terms of the actual run, I guess it was sort of similar to Cheshire. I didn't have, you know, a huge group to run with or anything.
Yeah. And so what was your goal going into London? What sort of time were you hoping for?
I just wanted to get a PB, really. I really have loved to have got the world's time of 2:29:30. I was being 15 seconds off, that was a bit sore. But I was really happy with the PB, and I think it's, at this stage, to be honest, I just feel like I'm learning so much from each race. I had a really good training block in the run up to London, actually, although I did get a pretty bad cold about a week before, which wasn't ideal. But apart from that, I had a good training block, and you know, I feel like there were so many positives that I took away from London. Like, my nutrition was really good. And I think generally like pacing was pretty good, although I just dropped off in the second half because it's so hard to hold your pace when you're by yourself. But yeah, I was really happy with, I think my placing, I was really happy with the second bit, was way more than I was expecting.
Yeah. So what do you think you can do differently now for your next marathon? Like, if that training block went so well, is there still things you think you could still improve on? Is there still areas of your training that you sort of think, oh, I've not quite nailed that yet?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's so much. I think I'm still sort of trying to build up my mileage a bit. I'm quite new to it, I haven't really done much mileage in the past, so I'm quite conservative on building up too quickly. But that's one area I think I can probably work on a bit. Nutrition again, you know, that was the first real block. Cheshire was an absolute disaster on my nutrition, so I basically had 1.5 gels and just couldn't stomach anymore. So that's that's always something that you can work on. You look at how much Kipchoge managed to take on in a marathon. It's just mind-blowing. I think, well, you know, I've got a long way to go. I think just I think I'll probably work on running by myself a bit more, actually. I'm so used to running with a group in training, which is amazing, but I think it's also useful to be able to kind of hold your own pace and get to know your own pace a bit more. There's so much, loads of S&C that I need to build in as well. I think just, you know, having only really had 18 months of marathon training, I've still got a long way to go.
That's great. That must be so good going into the next block, thinking there's still so much that you could improve on, because that's all potential, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can still work a bit more on. And I think that running on your own, that's interesting. I interviewed Natasha Cockrum a while ago, and that was one thing. I always take something from every interview. There's always something that I think, yeah, that's a really good idea. And she does a lot of her runs on her own. And she never listens to music either, because she just wants to recreate that kind of just being out there and having your own thoughts and just having to be tough.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the marathon is such a mental game at the end of the day. And I think you just got to be as prepared for all the mental battles that you're going to go through in the latter stages of the race.
Yeah. So, going forwards, what's your next big goal? Do you think you'll be at Manchester for the Commonwealth Trials?
So obviously Commonwealth or Europeans is the big goal for next year. Mm-hmm. And I was originally planning to do, I was looking at Seville, and that was before they announced that Manchester would be the trial. So I'm not actually sure what I'm going to do in terms of spring marathon, but I'll do a spring marathon to try and get a slot for the commies or the Europeans. That would be the big dream.
Yeah. So which would you prefer out of those two? Which is your kind of main aim, or would you be happy with either?
I would honestly be so happy with either. I mean, the Euro, it would be really great to get a GB vest. That would be incredible. I think it would be a really great field to be in as well. But the commies, you know, being a home Commonwealth Games, I also went to uni in Birmingham, so I feel like it's quite close to my heart. And I think my family would just be out in force. So they would love it.
Yeah. Oh, that's good to have positives for either. That's really good.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to be fussy.
No, because they're probably too close together, aren't they, to target both? So
I'm not even sure that they're giving places for both. Probably for that reason, I think, you know, just no one can perform well. I think they're about 3 weeks apart, so no one can really perform well in both.
Yeah. So is your ultimate goal Paris 2024, or do you not tend to look that far ahead?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it, obviously very lofty goal, but yeah, it's more of a dream, really, to be honest. It feels that way at the moment. But yeah, I mean, that really would be the dream.
Exactly.
Yeah, what Paris 24.
Work towards now over these years.
Yeah, exactly. And just, you know, I think the last 18 months has just been such a whirlwind. I mean, I never even thought I would get a Surrey best, let alone an England best, let alone a GB best. So I really feel like, you know, I just got to kind of take every step as it comes and see how far I can get in the next couple of years, really.
Yeah, see where it goes. So are you planning to get stuck into cross country this season? I think we're due to kick off in November. I don't know if yours are.
Yeah, cross country isn't my forte, to be honest. I'm not brilliant at it, but I might do a couple. I think, to be honest, my main focus is going to be marathon training, and I'm not sure how compatible it is with marathon training, really. But yeah, I might. It'd be nice to do a couple for my club to get the brownie points. To get us up there on the rankings. But yeah, I can't say I'm an exceptional cross country runner.
So definitely happier on the road.
Yeah.
how about trying some track? It doesn't look like you've done much on the track.
Yeah, that's one thing I do actually really want to do. I'm a little bit scared of it, but I do really want to do maybe 5k or 10k race. I think anything shorter than that is probably a no-go for me, because it takes me about 5k to get going. Real diesel engine.
You're not going back to your 1500 meter days.
No. I think it's probably about the same pace as my marathon pace, really. But yeah, I think I definitely want to do a couple of track races and put in some good training for it. So maybe after the spring marathon or something, get in a couple before the summer events.
Yeah, do a little bit of summer track and then off to Europeans or Commonwealth, hopefully.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned your coach, Phil Kissy. How important has that been to your improving? And like, what sort of sessions does he set you that have made the difference? What's the sort of things you weren't doing on your own?
Yeah, I mean, it's just made all the difference. I honestly credit absolutely everything to Phil, really. He in terms of what I was doing differently, absolutely everything. You know, the sessions that I think, in terms of the sessions, the main difference is just the volume in the actual training sessions. The ones when I used to do them with my club, there'd be probably a third of the volume. And I actually really like Phil's approach, because I kind of feel like once I'm there and geared up to do a session, I want to do a really good session. I want to come back knackered and feel like I've really worked. And, you know, I don't just want to do like 25 minutes of, or 4K track and then come back. So yeah, that's been the biggest change. And I think it took me a while to get used to it. I remember, you know, the first couple of months I was knackered. I come back from every session feeling pretty broken, but your body just gets used to it, and now I love the big sessions. So yeah, I think the volume in the sessions has been the main change, really, and obviously overall volume as well. I mean, I was only doing like probably 35 40 miles a week before I started with Phil, and now I'm up to sort of 70-75, so still not massive, but yeah, sort of increased that quite a lot over the time that I've been with Phil.
Yeah, how did you manage that, going from sort of increasing your mileage and the session intensities? Did you manage to stay injury free whilst doing that?
Mostly, yeah, we built up pretty slowly, and just, you know, I speak to Phil almost on a daily basis, and the, especially at the start, you know, he was always asked, checking in how I felt, and keeping a pretty close eye on how I was building up and how I was dealing with the increased volume. I think I had a couple of niggles at the start, but yeah, it was just a case of really managing it well and keeping the communication up, and Phil just monitoring it really.
Yeah, and you train with a group with him, do you?
Yeah, so we've actually when I was training for Cheshire, I was just with one other person for all my training, and then quite recently actually Phil's built out this incredible training group, so now there's a crew of probably about 15 of us, which has just made such a big difference. It's my build up for Cheshire versus my build up for London just felt like a breeze because training was so fun with everyone, and you know, it just makes such a big difference when you've got a big group to pull you around, especially on the really like monster marathon sessions. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. All being in it together makes it so much easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, no excuses for not turning up when everyone's there.
So I'm going to ask you some quick fire questions, and the first one is, have you got a go-to song like before any of those monster sessions or before a race? Is there any song that you particularly listen to sort of get you in the mood?
Not really, and that's mostly because I finally get really stuck in my head and then it gets really annoying in the sessions, so I actually try not to listen to music beforehand for that reason.
I'm really bad. People, I've said before on the show, I listened to one song for an entire marathon, and most people are just like, how did you do that? And it's just like, if I like a song at the time, I just listen to it on repeat. We wouldn't do that now. I'd probably not run with music, but yeah. a whole 3 hours of one song. So if you could run with any athlete, dead or alive, who would it be if you could go for a nice long run?
Oh, good question. I mean, oh, there are so many. I think
it'd be a group long run.
Yeah, Paula Radcliffe. I would love to be. I think, you know, what she's done is incredible, and I've just one of those people I would just really love to chat to. And yeah, so that's definitely one. Kelly Holmes, also like huge inspiration. And again, could just listen to her talk all day, I think. But yeah, I mean, there are just so many athletes who are such inspirational people, that yeah, I would love to meet and run with.
That sounds like a pretty great running group. So have you got a favorite race, like not a distance but a favorite actual race that you've run?
I mean, I haven't, I guess London, but I haven't got a huge wealth of races that I've done really. You know, I think between the, in terms of marathons that I've done, it's London or Cheshire, so I think London wins on that front. And yeah, in terms of half marathons, again, haven't done any huge ones, I don't think. Antrim was amazing. That was my England debut, but I kind of love that because it was my England debut. But yeah, I think in terms of races, London definitely holds a special place in my heart, but there are just so many races I want to do.
Yeah.
So really, I really want to do like Chicago, New York, Boston. Yeah, I've got a whole bucket list of ones I want to tick off.
So if we get you back on the podcast in a few years and ask you the same question, you can sit there saying, "Oh, I don't know, there's too many now."
Yeah, hopefully.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk. It's been really great to hear all about your last 18 months of amazing marathon running, and really looking forward to see what comes next from you. But yeah, thanks a lot for
thanks very much for having me.
You're welcome. We'll look forward to watching you next year.
Thank you.
Bye.